Greetings, and welcome to the Continental Drift. I'm Andy Valver. First of all, Happy New Year. I hope you all had great holidays and got a chance to spend some time with loved ones, eat good food, drink some good wine, and get some naps. That's always important after eating a lot of good food. Get some naps. So, it's 2024. We have the internet, drones on Mars, an international space station, electric cars, smartphones, and still, men are trying to kill each other. The war in Ukraine keeps dragging on, Putin hoping for war fatigue from the EU, Israel and Hamas trying to wipe each other out. What is it with men? But hey, Happy New Year, we keep a good thought, and hope for the best. Moving on. We lost a giant in 2023, certainly when it comes to the European Union. According to the Euronews website, from his humble beginnings as a French socialist, Jacques Delors is singularly credited with shaping what many take for granted, or even love to deride, the single market, Schengen agreements, and the Economic and Monetary Union, which was the predecessor to the euro becoming a common currency. We're talking about the guy who created the euro. No small achievement. And yet, beyond these achievements, Delors deserves recognition for his concerted efforts in attempting to prevent the bloodiest conflict on European soil since World War II, the Yugoslav disintegration wars. He hated violence and worked tirelessly to keep peace among nations. Today's modern European Union owes a lot to this man. French President Emmanuel Macron held his first press conference in 6 years this week. That's right, first press conference in 6 years. You know Joe Biden is looking at that and going, why can't I do that? Anyway, Macron was trying to get the French people to come together on a number of issues, education, innovation, immigration, but his main theme was making sure that everyone understood that he would do anything necessary to make sure that right-wing nutjob Marine Le Pen does not become president. That's good enough for me. Speaking of right-wing nutjobs, according to Euronews, Geert Wilders has made another concession to become Prime Minister of the Netherlands. The far-right election winner made a key concession to potential coalition partners, announcing that he's withdrawing legislation that he proposed in 2018 that calls for a ban on mosques and the Quran. So, he's making deals. Doesn't mean he still doesn't want to do it. I remember when the Dutch had an election a few years ago, and for 7 months, they had no government. And no one noticed. Okay, speaking of the other right-wing hijinks, Poland's right-wing Law and Justice Party had to give up the Prime Minister's office when Donald Tusk's party did well. Of course, the right-wingers are loath to give up power. To get a better idea of what's going on in Poland, I got my friend Dr. Joe Harper to come on the show and explain things. Here's my chat with Joe. Joe Harper is a freelance British journalist. He's based in Warsaw. He writes for the BBC, Politico, Deutsche Welle. He's editor of Poland's Memory Wars, Essays on Illiberalism, and he holds a PhD from the London School of Economics. His latest book is called Our Man in Warszawa. Joe, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Nice to be here.
The Law and Justice Party was in power for, what, 8 years?
Law and Justice, Peace Party, was in power from 2015 until last December. It came to power in a kind of wave of anti-immigration sentiment, let's say, and other things. More or less, just a year before Brexit and Trump. So it was a kind of precursor of populist nationalism. And then it got ousted in elections were in October the 15th of last year. And it took 2 months of kind of, prevarication and other things on behalf of the Law and Justice Party basically didn't want to give up power. And they still got the president, Andrzej Duda, and they also have the most number of seats in the parliament. So they took a long time to kind of, to try and postpone the election or the formation of the government of Donald Tusk, who was obviously the head of the European Council a few years ago. And they're still playing silly bastards, if I can say that on your...
You can say anything you want. So Tusk went in and cleared out PAP. Was that the public broadcasting
Yeah, he cleared out public media generally. So it was PAP, Polish Press Agency, TVP, the TV, and Polish Radio. He the government suspended the running of those of public media, and then changed the legal format under which they operate, which meant that he could then, you know, the new government could then rehire people on terms that it wanted.
But basically swinging back to doing real journalism.
Well, hopefully, yeah. I mean, we'll see. I guess after 8 years, there's a lot of people in particularly in TVP, in the public television, who are place people. You know, they've been stuck in there by peace, and they're very, very sympathetic towards that party and its mission. TVP became like basically a propaganda arm of the party, really, of the government over the last 8 years. So, yeah, hopefully we'll see. I mean, Tusk has been accused, and his government has been accused of using the same methods, to reclaim public media and also in the judiciary and other places, you know, quite authoritarian methods in order to kind of return democracy. But maybe it's needed, you know, maybe it's necessary in the first stage, just to kind of jolt these institutions and return them somehow to the path of sanity, really.
Looking at a bigger picture, I mean, Poland has basically made kind of a step back from all this right-wing and nationalism and populism stuff in Europe, which is really kind of what I'm interested in. You know, Viktor Orban's Hungary, Giorgia Meloni down in Italy, Geert Wilders. So in general, which way is Europe going? Is Europe headed in the direction of right-wing populism, or is it sort of a mix?
It's a sort of mix, I think. I mean, I think probably that you could think of it in terms of waves. I guess the first wave, the movement behind Brexit, or one of the main driving forces behind Brexit, was of that ilk as well. And in a sense, that's kind of been, or it's being discredited in the UK. You can see in France that Macron is trying to make gestures towards the far right in terms of immigration reforms and so on. So, yeah, I mean, Poland, but we'll see with Poland, you know, it's a big player these days, bigger than it used to be on the political scene in Europe. And there is a mission to return to the democratic path. Slovakia, on the other hand, which is much smaller, obviously, and less important, has gone in the opposite direction. Obviously, Hungary is going to be there forever, it looks like, until Orban sort of, you know, dies and disappears. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it looks like quite a mixed picture, you know. I mean, in the UK, it looks like the Labour Party will probably win the next election, and they obviously, how much real power they will have is difficult to say. But you know, this was kind of a marginal cult, wasn't it? Like 10 years ago, you know, 8-10 years ago, we wouldn't have ever imagined that there would be this that these far right kind of populist crazies would be even this close to power. So. It's a kind of half glass half full, glass half empty thing. I mean, my sense is that it's kind of ebbed. You know, the key thing also is Germany. I mean, what happens with the AfD, right? I mean, it's, in a sense, it's curtains. If Germany shifts away from being pro-European, that's where the tipping point could come. And that I'm not talking about the Germans kind of, you know, reconquering parts of Europe. But, you know, if their commitment wanes to the European project, then that's going to open up the possibility for us, you know, smaller countries to potentially go down that kind of populist path again.
Joe, I want to thank you for your time. I really appreciate you shedding some light on this. It's always great to talk to you. I hope you'll come back and join us again.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, thank you very much, Andy.
Be well, stay warm, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks.
And finally, while this is still a bit of last year's news, but the American donut company Krispy Kreme opened their first store in, of all places, in Paris in December. People stood outside all night long, and the first 10 people in line got free donuts for a year. Krispy Kreme plans on opening at least 500 points of sale, including stores and vending machines. I think I'll grab me another croissant and go read the news. That's it for this week. Thanks for giving me some of your precious time. I'm Andy Valver, and this is The Continental Drift. See you next time.